today. We are now joined by our good friend Tony Gwynn Jr., our Radio.com Sports MLB insider, and he's brought to you by our friends at Dell Technology Small Business Podference podcast series, available on Radio.com/Dell. That's Radio.com/Dell. Tony, how you been, man?
I'm well, Bill. How about yourself?
I'm doing well. I'm anticipating baseball. I'm getting a kick out of watching some of this stuff on Facebook Live and seeing some of the highlights and such of these teams getting ready. And give me your thoughts as to how baseball has handled the testing process, how has they've handled kind of their own little MLB sports bubble so far.
I think they've been okay. I think the snafu they had over the 4th of July weekend could have really cost them if it turned out to be more than just a snack. It seems like things have kind of, you know, after the weekend, I was worried that we might not get off the ground here on Friday. It seems like things are moving in a direction in which we're going to get to see some baseball come July 24th.
So when you talk about baseball on July 24th, how different do you think it's going to look? Because you know how it is. It takes you a little while to get into ball shape, so to speak, even though they cut this thing off mid-spring training. I don't know what to expect. Are we going to see this really energized, crisp style of baseball? Or because no fans and a very short kind of spring training 2.0, we may see some sloppy baseball?
Yeah, I have a hard time envisioning crisp baseball to start the season based on the circumstances. I really believe the teams that, because as you mentioned, especially offensively, it seems to take a while for a team, a lineup to get into a groove. That's why I expect the teams that pitch the ball well and catch it well will have an advantage. Because remember, in the 60-game stretch, a two-week portion of the season that you aren't playing good baseball could cost you a chance to win a division and get into the playoffs.
Who does this favor? Hitters? Pitchers?
That's a good question. My guess is that it favors pitchers. You know, I think the assumption was for spring training 2.0 that the pitchers would be kind of, if not starting from the ground level, would be starting close to the beginning, but When you look around baseball in terms of spring training 2.0, it seems like pitchers have done a pretty good job staying built up. You know, you're hearing 4 innings, 5 innings in some cases in some of these inter-squad games already. So that leads me to believe that pitchers did a pretty good job of really keeping the innings up, keeping their arm in shape. On the hitter side, there's not a whole lot you can do, right? You'd be lucky to find some guys during that time off who you can face live, but there's an adjustment period that happens. And with only one field to work with because they're working out of the big league stadiums, you're not probably getting the same amount of reps you are during spring training. So I would guess that the pitchers are going to be a little bit ahead of the hitters.
Talk about that. You've been through that because I tried to explain it, and while I've had the privy of being in there and seeing it, you guys are on those backfields where we can't be to you all the time. So talk about what spring training is normally like and kind of go through what your routine was versus what this abbreviated spring training is like inside a regular stadium.
Yeah, so typically you get to Arizona or Florida. The facilities have a boatload of different fields. So even if you have the one spring training game, guys can go to the backfields and get at-bats against some of the minor league guys. So you have managers have a little more to their disposal in terms of how they want to get guys ABs. And in this abbreviated version, you just aren't capable. Of course, you have the cages down below in the stadium, but it's really not the same as being able to send guys across, you know, your complex to different fields to play in different games and get different at bats. So because of that, you can only get so many guys live ABs during the day. So it leads me to believe that offensively it's going to take a little longer than maybe it has in the past.
So if we think this might favor pitchers, and if pitchers can go four, five innings maybe, we've seen Craig Counsell with these out-getters and decisions that have to be made as far as pitchers and matchups and such. Now, you don't have to worry about, you know, having a guy hit because obviously the DH takes care of that. But does that type of an abbreviated season favor a guy that's been doing it that way for a while now, such as Craig Counsell?
If you have enough depth, it can favor you, right? If you got more than, you know, a couple guys that you can lean on to be an out-getter, so to speak, yes, I think it does favor. If you got a deep bullpen or you got multiple, if you have more than just the five guys that can start a ball game, I think that gives you an advantage. So I'm sure Craig, who has been kind of ahead of the curve in terms of how he's used his bullpen, how he's used his pitchers, probably has a better idea how to make that work in a 60-game season. So I think there is an advantage to that, no doubt.
Talking Radio.com Sports MLB Insider, Tony Gwynn Jr. joining us on the Great Midwest Bank Hotline. So the other thing I wanted to ask you, and when you talk about moving guys around, we had gotten into this discussion, and I try to get everybody's opinion on this. Suppose a guy starts off slow, and you've only got 60 games, because you know how it is, Tony. Look, if you got, say, 20, 30 games, that's when you kind of get into your groove. If you start out 10 games or 12 games or 15 games and you're not getting it done and your team's losing a few ball games maybe because of you in clutch situations, how long do you go with a guy?
Yeah, this is uncharted territory for everybody, you know, and including managers. I asked Jace Tingler, who's the manager here in San Diego, that same question, like, how do you balance, you know, sticking with a guy in a setting like this? You're going to have probably a lot of young guys that have to at some point come up and help because your roster is, you know, you have that taxi squad. So I don't know. I don't know how it's going to actually work. My guess is that in a 60-game season, you don't have the luxury to wait 20, 30 games for somebody to get hot. So I think you'll see a lot more of playing hot hands. I mean, I think guys are going to get, you know, maybe the first 2-3 weeks to kind of find their groove. If not by then, you're probably going to see a lot more changes in lineups and at positions compared to years past. But that all is predicated on how guys are swinging the bat. If your normal eight that go out there, or normal nine now, since you have DH, are going out there and they're swinging the bat, probably won't be a lot of changes. But my guess is that we'll see more than usual this year.
You're a guy that comes from the player side. Now you're in the media side of things. But the way this whole thing got from point A to point B, got handled, and what looms on the horizon, give me a little of your insight as a guy that's been in the clubhouse from the player's perspective as to what players are thinking now, what players are going to be thinking next year, and then at the end of next year, probably more so important, as they start to get into collective bargaining again.
I think right now what players are thinking are it really has nothing to do with those negotiations. It has everything to do with getting through this season healthy. I think that is probably players' number one concern. They've gotten past all the negotiation part. They want to get through this spring training and be healthy. And once they get to the season, they'll lock in on the season and put their best foot forth. But all that being said, in the back of their mind, they know at the end of 2021, there's a new collective bargaining agreement that needs to be addressed. And I think a lot of what we saw, you know, in this little break that we had, was the recognition that neither side wanted to give too much by the time, because they knew another collective bargaining agreement, a real collective bargaining agreement, is coming up. So that's going to be in the back of their minds. I think what people have to realize, at least on the player side, is their conviction, a lot of it has to do with the history of what the players before them had to give up in order to get them where they are now. And I'm glad that they finally were able to come to some type of agreement. But I think the pandemic just kind of it threw this thing into the washer, or the dryer, if you will. You know, it just kind of heated it up. And fortunately for us, you know, there was some language in there that brought a season no matter what. And we're going to get to see baseball at the end of the day.
Were you disappointed at all when you heard the commissioner say that the whole intent was to play 60 games to begin with? Because I thought when I heard that, I'm thinking to myself, then why in the hell did you put us through all of this?
Right. Yeah, I was disappointed. And you see, the next day he had to come in and kind of backpedal a little bit after saying that. But
as my dad always said, you can't put the blank back in the horse. That's what they tried to do.
they did try to do it. And he might have opened himself up for that same grievance that he was worried about from the players, you know, being able to negotiate in good faith. So I'm sure that's why he had to come back the next day and kind of walk it back. But it gives you a little insight to why there seems to be no trust, at least on the player side, right? Because it's a lot of those statements and a lot of what was negotiated in the media, I think really left a sour taste in a lot of on the player side, at least. It left a sour taste in her mouth. And then they have a statement come out like that shortly after you get a deal done. You have to think that won't be forgotten. Baseball players have memories like elephants. They just don't forget anything. So I'm sure that's going to be something that is brought up, and I won't be surprised if there is a grievance filed ultimately.
Back to X's and O's. So give me some of your thoughts as favorable teams that you're going to be looking at in this very shortened season that should be there come, quote, postseason time.
I mean, listen, you got to look at the Yankees in the American League. You got to look at the Braves in the National League. I like where the Cardinals are at. I like where Milwaukee's at. You want to see how their – I want to see how their starting pitching kind of comes around and how – Craig goes about using his staff as a whole. But, I mean, clearly they have to have a lot of talent. That National League Central should be fun to watch. I think, especially when you include the American League side of it, right? Because I think the National League side is the stronger side. In the National League, American League West, you got probably one of the toughest divisions in all of baseball with those teams kind of getting after it. So, I like the Padres as a dark horse. Obviously, we can't go anywhere without mentioning the Dodgers. They're another squad that will be interesting to see because although they're loaded, they've lost a lot of their core, at least at the starting pitching side, right?
Right.
David Price elects not to come back. You lose Rich Hill to Minnesota. Ryu goes to Toronto. Those are some big pieces for them, and they're going to have to have some young guys step up, but the beauty about a 60-game season is maybe with the exception of the Orioles, everybody's going to be in this bad boy.
At what point, last question, but at what point do you think, God forbid, you start getting positive tests, what point do you think that the season becomes derailed? Is it 5 guys, 7 guys, 10 guys? What kind of a decimation does a team or teams have to sustain before Major League Baseball would say, you know what, just not worth it, we're going to shut it down?
You get a cluster of not just like 3 or 4 guys, because that's the thing is it could be 3 or 4 or 5 guys that get it, and it may not necessarily get Major League Baseball to stop. But you have to think about the other players; they're seeing those positives pop up, and you have to wonder what is their want to if you continue to see tests pop up. So I think if you start having a team with 4 or 5 guys at a time, it's going to really start to bring up some red flags, not necessarily from the league standpoint, but from the player standpoint, because they're the ones in that locker room with those same guys. So you'll start to see, I think you'll start to see some hedging if that begins to happen.
Tony, it's great to talk to you. Always loved interviewing you when you were a player, even better now. And thanks for joining us for a couple of minutes, my friend, okay?
No problem, Bill. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. There you go. Radio.com Sports MLB Insider Tony Gwynn Jr. brought to you by our good friends at the Dell Technologies Small Business Podference podcast series, available at radio.com/Dell. That is radio.com/Dell. And he joins us on the Great Midwest Bank hotline. And our friends over there at Great Midwest Bank, they've got your passion. Maybe it's outgrown your home. A Great Midwest Bank home renovation loan may give you the space that it deserves. Visit greatmidwestbank.com. That's greatmidwestbank.com. Simply local lending since 1935. He's